Chapter 32. Our neighbor there was shooting up ashes. He sometimes clears his red hot gullet like that, and a thunderstorm came along at the same time. It was very messy, but our neighbor is generally well behaved, just smokes quietly, as he did that day when I first showed you the smudge in the sky from the schooner's deck. He's a good-natured, lazy fellow of a volcano. I saw a mountain smoking like that before, she said, staring at the slender stem of a tree fern some dozen feet in front of her. It wasn't very long after we left England some few days, though. I was so ill at first that I lost count of days. A smoking mountain, I can't think how they called it. Vesuvius, perhaps, suggested Hest. That's the name. I saw it 2 years, ages ago, said Hest. On your way here? No, long before I ever thought of coming into this part of the world. I was yet a boy. She turned and looked at him attentively, as if seeking to discover some trace of that boyhood in the mature face of the man with the hair thin at the top and the long, thick mustaches. Hest stood the frank examination with a playful smile, hiding the profound effect these veiled gray eyes produced, whether on his heart or on his nerves, whether sensuous or spiritual, tender or irritating, he was unable to say. Well, Princess of Samburan, he said at last, have I found favor in your sight? She seemed to wake up and shook her head. I was thinking, she murmured very low. Thought, action, so many snares. If you begin to think, you will be unhappy. I wasn't thinking of myself, she declared with a simplicity which took Hest aback somewhat. On the lips of a moralist this would sound like a rebuke, he said, half seriously, but I won't suspect you of being one. Moralists and I haven't been friends for many years. As he had listened with an air of attention. I understood you had no friends, she said. I'm pleased that there's nobody to find fault with you for what you have done. I like to think that I am in no one's way. Hest would have said something, but she did not give him time. Unconscious of the movement he made, she went on. What I was thinking to myself was, why are you here? Hest let himself sink on his elbow again. If by you you mean we well, you know why we are here. She bent her gaze down at him. No, it isn't that. I meant before all that time before you came across me, and guessed at once, that I was in trouble, with no one to turn to. And you know it was desperate trouble too. Her voice fell on the last words, as if she would end there, but there was something, so expectant in Hest's attitude as he sat at her feet, looking up at her steadily, that she continued, after drawing a short, quick breath. It was, really. I told you I had been worried before by bad fellows. It made me unhappy, disturbed, angry too. But oh, how I hated, hated, hated that man. That man was the florid Schomburg with the military bearing, benefactor of white men, decent food, to eat in decent company, mature victim of belated passion. The girl shuddered. The characteristic harmoniousness of her face became, as it were, decomposed for an instant. Hest was startled. Why think of it now, he cried. It's because I was cornered that time. It wasn't as before. It was worse, ever so much. I wished I could die of my fright, and yet it's only now that I begin to understand what a horror it might have been. Yes, only now, since we, Hest stirred a little. Came here, he finished. Her tenseness relaxed, her flushed face went gradually back to its normal tint. Yes, she said indifferently, but at the same time she gave him a stealthy glance of passionate appreciation. And then her face took on a melancholy cast, her whole figure drooped imperceptibly. But you were coming back here anyhow, she asked. Yes. I was only waiting for Davidson. Yes, I was coming back here, to these ruins, to Wang, who perhaps did not expect to see me again. It's impossible to guess at the way that Chinaman draws his conclusions, and how he looks upon one. Don't talk about him. He makes me feel uncomfortable. Talk about yourself. About myself? I see you are still busy with the mystery of my existence here, but it isn't at all mysterious. Primarily, the man with the quill pen in his hand in that picture you so often look at is responsible for my existence. He is also responsible for what my existence is, or rather has been. He was a great man in his way. I don't know much of his history. I suppose he began like other people, took fine words for good, bringing coin and noble ideals for valuable banknotes. He was a great master of both, himself, by the way. Later he discovered how am I to explain it to you? Suppose the world were a factory, and all mankind workmen in it. Well, he discovered that the wages were not good enough. That they were paid in counterfeit money. I see, the girl said slowly. Do you? Hest, who had been speaking, as if to himself, looked up curiously. It wasn't a new discovery, but he brought his capacity for scorn to bear on it. It was immense. It ought to have withered this globe. I don't know how many minds he convinced. But my mind was very young then, and youth, I suppose, can be easily seduced even by a negation. He was very ruthless, and yet he was not without pity. He dominated me without difficulty. A heartless man could not have done so. Even to fools he was not utterly merciless. He could be indignant, but he was too great for flouts and jeers. What he said was not meant for the crowd. It could not be, and I was flattered to find myself among the elect. They read his books, but I have heard his living word. It was irresistible. It was as if that mind were taking me into its confidence, giving me a special insight into its mastery of despair. Mistake, no doubt. There is something of my father in every man who lives long enough. But they don't say anything. They can't. They wouldn't know how, or perhaps, they wouldn't speak if they could. Man on this earth is an unforeseen accident which does not stand close investigation. However, that particular man died as quietly as a child goes to sleep. But, after listening to him, I could not take my soul down into the street to fight there. I started off to wander about, an independent spectator, if that is possible. For a long time the girl's gray eyes had been watching his face. She discovered that, addressing her, he was really talking to himself. Hest looked up, caught sight of her as it were, and caught himself up, with a low laugh and a change of tone. All this does not tell you why I ever came here. Why, indeed? It's like prying into inscrutable mysteries which are not worth scrutinizing. A man drifts. The most successful men have drifted into their successes. I don't want to tell you that this is a success. You wouldn't believe me if I did. It isn't. Neither is it the ruinous failure it looks. It proves nothing, unless perhaps some hidden weakness in my character, and even that is not certain. He looked fixedly at her, and with such grave eyes, that she felt obliged to smile faintly at him, since she did not understand what he meant. Her smile was reflected, still fainter, on his lips. This does not advance you much in your inquiry, he went on. And in truth your question is unanswerable. But facts have a certain positive value, and I will tell you a fact. One day I met a cornered man. I use the word, because it expresses the man's situation exactly, and because you just used it yourself. You know what that means? What do you say? She whispered, astounded. Man. Hest laughed at her wondering eyes. No. I mean in his own way. I knew very well it couldn't be anything like that, she observed under her breath. I won't bother you with the story. It was a custom house affair, strange as it may sound to you. He would have preferred to be killed outright, that is, to have his soul dispatched to another world, rather than to be robbed of his substance, his very insignificant substance, in this. I saw that he believed in another world because, being cornered, as I have told you, he went down on his knees and prayed. What do you think of that? Hest paused. She looked at him earnestly. You didn't make fun of him for that? She said. Hest made a brusque movement of protest. My dear girl, I am not a ruffian, he cried. Then, returning to his usual tone. didn't even have to conceal a smile. Somehow it didn't look a smiling matter. No, it was not funny. It was rather pathetic. He was so representative of and the past victims of the great joke. But it is by folly alone that the world moves, and so it is a respectable thing upon the whole. And besides, he was what one would call a good man. I don't mean, especially because he had offered up a prayer. No. He was really a decent fellow. He was quite unfitted for this world. He was a failure. A good man cornered a sight for the gods. For no decent mortal cares to look at that sort. A thought seemed to occur to him. He turned his face to the girl. And you, who have been cornered too, did you think of offering a prayer? Neither her eyes nor a single one of her features moved the least bit. She only let fall the words. I am not what they call a good girl. That sounds evasive, said Hest after a short silence. The good fellow did pray, and after he had confessed to it, I was struck by the comicality of the situation. No, don't misunderstand me, I am not alluding to his act, of course. And even the idea of eternity, infinity, omnipotence, being called upon to defeat the conspiracy of two miserable Portuguese half-castes did not move my mirth. From the point of view of the supplicant, the danger to be conjured was something like the end of the world, or worse. No. What captivated my fancy was that I, Axel Hest, the most detached of creatures in this earthly captivity, the veriest tramp on this earth, an indifferent stroller going through the world's bustle, that I should have been there to step into the situation of an agent of providence. I, a man of universal scorn and unbelief. You are putting it on, she interrupted in her seductive voice, with a coaxing intonation. No. I am not like that, born or fashioned, or both. I am not for nothing the son of my father, of that man in the painting. I am he, all but the genius. And there is even less in me than I make out, because the very scorn is falling away from me year after year. I have never been so amused as by that episode in which I was suddenly called to act such an incredible part. For a moment I enjoyed it greatly. It got him out of his corner, you know. You saved a man for fun, is that what you mean? Just for fun? Why this tone of suspicion, remonstrated Hest. Suppose the sight of this particular distress was disagreeable to me. What you call fun came afterwards, when it dawned on me that I was for him a walking, breathing, incarnate proof of the efficacy of prayer. I was a little fascinated by it, and then, could I have argued with him? You don't argue against such evidence, and besides it would have looked as if I had wanted to claim all the merit. Already his gratitude was simply frightful. Funny position, wasn't it? The boredom came later, when we lived together on board his ship. I had, in a moment of inadvertence, created for myself a tie. How to define it precisely I don't know. One gets attached in a way to people one has done something for. But is that friendship? I am not sure what it was. I only know that he who forms a tie is lost. The germ of corruption has entered into his soul. Hest's tone was light, with the flavor of playfulness which seasoned all his speeches, and seemed to be of the very essence of his thoughts. The girl he had come across, of whom he had possessed himself, to whose presence he was not yet accustomed, with whom he did not yet know how to live, that human being so near and still so strange, gave him a greater sense of his own reality than he had ever known in all his life. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.